Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can harness the power of AI to drive remarkable growth. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by senior executive changemakers from around the globe, unpacking what works and what doesn't. Ready to unlock growth mode together? Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers in banking. And today, I'm being joined by Cyrus Daruwala.
That's
if I pronounce it correctly.
Yeah.
He's the partner at 3A Ventures and the head of Asian Economic Forum. Thanks for joining us, Cyrus.
Good to be here, Tim.
Yeah. Great to see you here also in Bali, specifically, where we're at Engage Asia for Backbase. And just to give a little bit of context, Cyrus is helping some of the world's biggest financial institutions decide what to modernize next. He advises banks and regulators on everything from practical modernization to data and AI, turning tech bets into measurable outcomes. He's a frequent keynote and panel voice across Asia and brings a very pragmatic lens on growth, resilience, and what to prioritize for real impact. How does that sound?
That sounds like a handful, but thank you.
So that's what you're all about. Now, before we get started and dive in, what's currently top of mind to you?
The top of mind, actually, Tim, is a bit of a concern, and concern from a geopolitical standpoint. You've seen how multipolar our world has become. There is a war on practically every continent, and it's actually ballooning. And this political rift that we are going through is also as unprecedented as AI. Think about this. In your life and I, we haven't gone through World War I or II. So this is the first full scale. There's a war breaking out everywhere. Now, whilst we can say it doesn't affect me, it does. In our world of banking, it inhibits and it restricts a lot. Where you work, where's your money coming from? Who are you dealing with? Who is your biggest customer? Where is their origin? Does that mean that you can't deal with country X, Y, or Z? All of that, as you see in the news every day, that is kind of straitjacketing banking and business movement for people like you and I. I think that's top of mind, how this is all going to unfold and what's going to happen. And will we stabilize and go back to heydays, which is pre-COVID, or will we meander for the next 2 or 3 years? And that means our economies and our finances would suffer. So very profound and large statement, but that's what's top of my mind. And I'm sure top of the big boys and the banking and the CEO's mind.
So. Yeah. Thanks for sharing this view.
Yeah.
This is a view on what's literally happening in the world and how the boardrooms probably need to also make decisions.
Correct.
Manage partially the risk, but also make sure that you're running a proper operation for the current state of the business.
Correct.
You also mentioned AI. So there's this geopolitical shift, changing the world order and everything that comes with it, including war, unfortunately,
which
is very painful in many ways. But secondary, you'll say there's also a technology movement happening that's
true,
as paramount or as large.
Unprecedented too, correct.
Yeah.
So there are so many things happening in AI. Again, starting more at a macro or a political or socio-political angle, the inundation day-to-day life of AI for students, for college students, for law graduates, for degree holders, for people who are programming, people who had learned programming and now it's redundant. All of that, AI is extremely disruptive. I think the world is at a 50-50. It's extremely productive and hence it's being used to the hilt, but it's also disruptive where people are taking a shortcut. We've stopped thinking. We used to Google earlier. Now we are submitting theses and writing letters and creating performas and invoices without thinking through. So we are losing a little sight on that. But again, the better side of that, I mean, look at Backbase and look at the banking prowess that you have created. Imagine your customers or imagine our banking customers. It's so crystal clear that you don't need an army of people. You need a drag, drop, an AI capability, a solution that is AI ready, and you can go to market within days. So there is, of course, as with anything, like with a new weapon, if I dare call it that, there's a flip side to it, but there is a great side to it. And I think in banking, we have been a net benefactor using the power of AI. So that's what I think AI is changing.
Yeah. And software also very much holds true, right? I think in the context of banking, the operational efficiency you can gain by plugging agentic AI as an example, is very clear. Also here in the room with the 125 bankers we have in the room.
Exactly.
It is the number one topic. And, you know, there are banks already seeing those.
Correct. And the endorsement, the endorsement to that is nobody has come up and saying, I'm afraid AI is going to cut jobs. I think everybody has adopted and accepted the fact that AI is going to enhance skills. So all of us are going to be nudged into becoming more AI savvy, whether it's the cameraman and the editing of this video, or whether it is a banker creating a new product. It is operationally enabling us. And I think it's about time that universally in 2025, we will all concur. AI is here. It's daily life. It's in technology, operations, people, how we eat, how we live, how we work, how we study. Yeah. So let's embrace it and make the most of it.
Yeah. Oh. There's a statement that we typically make in our leadership group, to take the work out.
Yes.
And what that basically tells you is that the view we have as well is taking the work out that's just mundane, it's manual. It's not really adding value as much, but it does take a lot of time.
Correct.
As an example, creating a briefing for this conversation here, although we skipped the briefing.
Yes, we did.
Good thing of the show. It could take a few hours. Yeah. Right now, it's one click, all the messages is done, and I have exactly what I need to prove it off the ground.
Very true.
I think in banking, that's, I mean, this is just a sliver example of what you can achieve there.
I think so too. Your own team showed multiple, depicted that it's the tip of the iceberg. There is so much beneath it and so much we are unraveling and uncovering as we go. So it's an exciting time, no doubt. I mean, adoption is. Yeah.
Hey, then let's move into the episode, Cyrus. And perhaps the first question would be, talk us a little bit through the dynamics in the ASEAN, I have to say, region.
Okay.
It's very dynamic. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of change.
Correct.
In many different ways. What are the trends in, let's say, topics that you see?
Loaded question. Do we have a couple of hours?
We have forever.
Yeah, we have forever. So as you mentioned, I mean, I'm involved in the ASEAN Economic Forum. We look at our business intelligence charter. And what does that mean? The ASEAN committee or the secretariat does policy making. You see the photographs, people holding hands, taking a photograph in beautiful Bali. What happens next? And I think that comes to the ASEAN Economic Forum, namely Sachin Gopalan and Ashish Kapai. These are the people who are custodians. What does that mean? We have to look at all lenses of ASEAN, not just financial services. And let me tell you, financial services is a recipient of our money or our data. So what does that mean? ASEAN agrees to trade with each other. Hypothetically, there are, as I said, multipolar regions. Take my side. No, take my side. No, I'm your protector. No, I'm your financier. We're sandwiched in the middle, Singapore being the biggest of the lot and the most visible. But Indonesia, where we are, is the biggest by region. And mark my words, by 27, it will be the number four economy in the world. Number four, maybe number five in the world. What does all that mean to banking and financial services? Intra-ASEAN trade will flourish. Intra-ASEAN plus Korea, China, India trade will flourish. Intra-ASEAN plus three, plus other regions that may join in, namely Russia or Iran, which we are okay with, may join in. Now imagine a trade book. If I'm a banker, if I'm a very large CIMB or HDFC, all of your clients, what does that mean? My transfer of funds, my receivables and payables, my trade finance book, I would say follow the money train. Where is the origination of the trade? Where is the recipient of the end, trade flow? All of that means the banking will be in the epicenter of all of this, because you will be judged by the clients that you have and the regions that you operate in. So what does that mean for a financial institution, what we call a pan-regional financial institution? you not only have multiple bosses, by which I mean the regulators of each country, you have Bank of International Settlements, the banker's bank, you know, the central banker's bank. You need to pander and adhere to all. So what does that mean from a macro perspective, you ask? Trade will flourish. Because we are now becoming more and more self-contained and aware, we will start trading with each other. So people and residents of ASEAN will flourish. Think of it like the cusp of the EU and how during its euphoric stage of formation, the EU flourished and all the countries that were in it really opened up. That's what's happening to ASEAN as we speak. And the first recipient of that benefit would be financial institutions, mostly banking. Insurance is not cross-border. It's very in-country. So when it comes to retail consumer banking and the flow of people, when it comes to corporate banking, the flow of trade, and when it comes to SMEs, me, the individual, going to these countries, I think we will start seeing a huge adoption of pan-regional policies. And the technology that prevails would be the one that helps institutions react very quickly, come up with a product very quickly, customize very quickly, onboard very quickly, and create that transparent pain that you showed again in the morning. So a long answer on how, because trade will flourish, people will. Because people flourish and wealth is created, the financial institutions will also start flourishing. So I think it's going to be a hockey stick where by the end of next year, we will see a good swing up.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
And thinking along those lines, how well do you feel that the typical incumbent banking, incumbent institutions is ready for that speed, ready for that volume?
Great question. I think let's give it a maturity of 1 to 3. And I think most of the institutions, I mean, as an analyst community, we have this bad habit of scoring everyone and analyzing everyone, right? Why shouldn't you? And I think about, I say 60% of the top 5, top 8, top 10 banks in each ASEAN country are pretty much mature. I'd give them a 3 out of 3. Now, why do I say that? If they were able to understand what the limitation of their technology stack is and overcome that, that was a mature decision directed by maybe a board member or a CEO, but the adoption is bank-wide. So I think the financial institutions are now cognizant that they have seen the new digital banks take away a little bit of their lunch. They know what the consumers want. They know what an Apple or a new Samsung can do from a technology delivery to a consumer point of view. And they're embedding themselves with this look, feel, UI, UX of all of these gadgets that we live off. And institutions are now cognizant that I should be aligned with that sort of ease of use. So overall, it's great for you and I, the consumer, and everybody else who is a bank account owner. It's great for service providers and strategic partners like yourself, because now you've crossed that hurdle. And lastly, every single person who is using banking will have less of a frustration. Oh, my bank can't do it. So the ones and the twos will have to buck up. So that's what I see from a banking perspective.
Is it fair to say that what you're now describing is the outcome of the initial digital transformation that had to happen?
Had
to pass 5 to 10 years. Basically, the majority made the switch.
True.
On their own, with a partner like us, sure. Maybe in other flavors, all good. What is next? Because if you think about the AI paradigm that's now kicking in, you need to have your data centralized. You
True.
Need to have your AI applied also centrally. You need to manage it appropriately with the guardrails and everything that comes with it. How do you see that part?
Also, a very lengthy question, but let me try and summarize. You've got your iPhone. An iPhone is now Apple Intelligence embedded. And that Samsung that we just saw, Fold, is AI enabled, and Microsoft is Copilot powered, and our search engines are ChatGPT 5 and above. Did somebody coax us into adopting it? No. we knew this was coming, or an Apple 17 for that matter, with the latest AI. Did somebody coax us? Did somebody put a gun to our head saying, thou shalt spend $1,500 on the latest phone? No. It's nifty. It's new. It's needed. There's a bit of FOMO also, and surprisingly, a little bit of hype. And the banks go through that too. Everybody's doing something in AI. I should too. But I think collectively, the momentum is so much that AI becomes the standard de facto. So hereinafter, every RFI and RFP that we actually deal with for a bank, if it doesn't mention AI, we find it a little surprising, saying, because AI is already embedded in everything. Your loans origination solution is AI enabled. Your customer journey is AI fueled. My clearing and settlement is AI enabled. So all of that means adoption is inevitable, some sluggishly, some proactively. And that's the difference between the ones, the twos, and the threes. And I think almost everybody aspires to be a three in maturity. So AI, there's no world or banking without it.
Fully agreed. And in the morning keynote, you basically saw us speak about, let's say, a more tactical application of AI, where you say, we have a few tools in a few of the verticals of the bank that solve for a few use cases, but it's basically at the highest level of the organization.
Yeah, true.
Whereas if you completely become AI native and you're organized around it at the core, you get a completely new operating model.
Yeah, true.
You can even get to a certain level of autonomy over
your intelligence. True.
Is that very far out to your view?
I think so. By the time it becomes the norm, the way, hypothetically, in your GCCs, what you call the Global Center of Excellence and Global Center of Commands, that very large financial institutions have set up. It could be in Poland, it could be in Prague, it could be in Hyderabad, in Bangalore. What were they supposed to do? These 15,000, 20,000 people, what were they supposed to do? They were supposed to fix codes, create new products, help clearing and settlements at the back, and mundane tasks that you alluded to. Now, by the time we complete 2027, say, in the next two and a half years, that pool of 25,000 people may have shrunk to 5,000 people doing those tasks. So that's how severe it is. So I think we are maybe 2 years or 2.5 years into a completely different looking back end. The front end doesn't change because you and I are the front end. The super app that Backbase creates, and we saw that on stage too, the super app is the touch point.
For now.
Next, it may be voice command. You don't need that. We heard that too in the morning.
Yeah, we talked about conversational banking.
Correct.
And so there's going to be a moment where the form factor just completely changes.
Exactly. I mean, MIT and my own, goddaughter is in that frame of mind where her thesis is there's no finger needed.
Correct.
It's just conversational. So is it too far away? I think majority of the spend, we are tracking almost $500 billion in AI-related spend. Now, AI-related means AI applications, the data, the operations, the GPUs, the MIPS, the compute, the storage, the cloud burst, and all of that is at $500 billion. I think it will quadruple by 2027. 2028, when every institution is completely AI driven. That's going to be a very paradigm shift.
Including banks by 2028.
I would say, again, this is an analyst's opinion. I'd say 50% of the banks were completely AI driven by 2027.
But the moment, let's just follow that.
Hypothesize, yeah?
If that's the case, then the other half is practically
scrambling to follow up.
Well, that's the point of the economies.
Yeah.
To actually compete. Like, yeah, unit economics won't check out anymore.
Yeah.
The banks that are AI native are incredibly fast in getting their value propositions to market and innovate. And the internal operation will be 5x more effective. So I think it's almost black and white.
It's so simple. It's like you and I taking our old tablet or an old phone to a repair shop. boss, can you fix this for me? I'm sorry, this model has been sunset. We don't have the skill sets, nor the parts, nor the know-how on how to fix. You're better off buying a new phone. That's how AI is going to come down and cascade towards us. You won't have the skill sets to supply to a Python or a C++ or a COBOL programmer anymore. That will become redundant. So you don't have a choice but to download the latest version, and the latest version is an AI-enabled version of the software. So, yeah.
If you think out loud, like, where would you start? Like, it's all sounds very almost daunting.
I know.
So we can set our digital transformation, which back in the day was also a major thing.
It was a big thing.
So we need to do everything on all channels. It's omnichannel. Then there's a whole platform play behind it. I need to do all my integrations. I need to bring the data together. That already is a large agenda. And many of the listeners are still in that agenda.
Yeah, true. I think what I would suggest to people, and when we are given this, I want to do something in AI, I'm like, okay, what exactly are you trying to achieve? What is your use case? And the number one thing that needs to be defined is my existing use case. Okay, so in Indonesia, it's almost 300 million people. So there's a huge growth market. But what if you were a Singapore or a Hong Kong, 7-8 million people, multi-regional and private banks and wealth managers and all scrambling for that small pie of the ultra high net worth or even a retail consumer? How do you grow? The answer is you will reach a glass ceiling when it comes to top line growth. So what's next? You start looking at bottom line cost. Where is my biggest cost? It's always IT. But is it, Tim, I ask you? It's OT, operational technology too. Very few people focus on operating cost. IT cost could be 30%, 40%, 60%, 70% is operating cost. People, yep. Programmers. All of that comes under the microscope. Our growth in the forecastable future is X percent. Our cost is still prohibitively high. What do we do to shave off that cost? Again, AI enters in. You don't need that many programmers and developers and code writers and testers. There's a financial institution that can create an agentic AI to take over. So this juggling act that financial institutions are doing, should I go from analog to digital? Done. Should I go from digital to cloud native? Done. Now, the solutions that you procured need to be AI infused. And that way, the leaders in the market, like Backbase, they have this distinct first mover advantage. The whole journey has been thought through using AI. And it's my feedback as a consumer. That is very powerful. So banks will start adopting. Again, the same analogy. We don't work too hard on downloading the latest operating system app, do we?
Gets delivered to us.
It click. And up it goes. So the same thing for core banking. There are some AI-infused core banking players that are saying all of your modules will be AI-enabled. People who move fast get the advantage. People who are sluggish will start losing clients. That's what we are seeing.
So one thing that stood out to me is use case. And the way we've been looking at this so far, also today in the keynote, there's use cases where AI really can deliver value.
Correct.
In revenue growth, in operational efficiency, in customer engagement or customer experience, like how you're basically helping the customer be successful, and in software development.
Yeah.
Right? I think that one is also very, very clear by now. If you really take out the work, you can lower your QA burden, you can lower your BA burden, you can lower your project management burden, basically everything in that bucket, there's about a 50% improvement that we see internally in Backbase through our own product development, but also in the product projects that we deliver.
Correct.
That already is second to none.
Correct.
But looking at the other three buckets, and maybe especially on revenue growth, if you talk about, hey, there's no top line possibilities anymore in the ASEAN region that you are close with, do you feel there's...
What happens next?
Yeah, like, do you feel it's just bottom line, it's cost efficiency, and hence it's in the operational efficiency bucket?
There is a three-factor approach to that. Japan is what you call negative interest territory, which means you literally pay the bank if you put money in it. Now, how absurd is that to the rest of the world? Why? Because they are a net savings economy and they are cash, a liquidity positive. So putting money in the bank costs the bank a certain amount to look after, be the custodian of that finance. So what are they doing? They have come to a point where we've covered all 100 million Japanese. Where do we grow next? Japanese financial institutions are buying MUFG, one of the biggest, and they're here. They bought a bank in the Philippines, one in Vietnam. Why are they going to ASEAN and not to, say, the Americas or to Europe? Because Europe is saturated and overbanked. America is in a world of its own. China, you can't really enter. That only leaves ASEAN or Asia, including India.
Yeah.
So institutions that can't grow in their territory, UOB, OCBC, and DBS, the three banks of Singapore, a classic example. The only way they could grow their top line and their profitability is either they have regional presences, what we call pan-regional banks, or they acquire financial institutions that are doing well and have the potential. That's the only way to grow. Luckily, what does ASEAN and Asia have going for it? Massive population. Half of the world lives here in Asia Pacific. Half of the world. More than 4.5 billion people live here. So we still have a good growth trajectory in large populated countries like where we are in Indonesia, then next door is Thailand and Myanmar and Cambodia, unbanked, so on and so forth. Then comes the cost burden. That's a mature bank problem, cost. So the new banks in the region are looking at growth, and AI fuels growth. I think that was one of your taglines as well.
But just throwing, maybe it's a little bit tactical, but if I think about very mature banks, they're very saturated and there's no way to really grow top line, just to challenge you a little bit more, to me it feels like a let's expand the share of wallet with that customer base that you have.
True.
Bring new value propositions to life.
True.
Let's service them 10 out of 10 or 3 out of 3. To, you know, heavily differentiate.
True.
And basically capture the market based on the value proposition that we have.
Very true. Yeah, I mean, that could
do,
be...
Do you see those angles as well? Or is it just, okay, for DBS, we're going to go pan-regional and basically grow from that angle?
Well, okay, so if you're a DBS, if you're an OCBC, you're an UOB, let's just talk Singapore because it's a classic market, which is saturated, you know, very small by any size. And there are three local banks, three very large global banks that are as good as local, you know, Standard and HSBC. So if you ask these 6 or 7 banks, where will they grow? Each one has a record of 2.5 to 3.5 products. That's the average. I've got my CASA, I've got my cards, I've got my loan, and I've got some other wealth management or asset management or an investment account. What next? I have reached, as a consumer, a saturation point. The same thing in insurance.
It's a classic value proposition. I'm with you.
Yeah. So they are now trying to see other person's market share. I am better at SME, so come to me, Mr. SME. That could be taking away a market share from an incumbent bank, or then the classic growth, which is outside. And hence, UOB is very successful in what they call trade and SME businesses. They follow the trade book. DBS is very good in acquiring banks and making it as good as local. So in Indonesia, in Malaysia, in the Philippines, they have acquired financial institutions. So different strategies for growth, but you're right. If you have reached that max wallet share, what next? And that's a tick-tock question. You know, I mean, it's going to come around soon.
Well, hitting that the benchmark is 2.5 to 3 products.
That's very
healthy, of course.
Correct.
In case that is not holding fully true, then I think there's big headspace still to grow, of course.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, let's move on to another topic, and that typically gets discussed in the podcast as well, and that's about what type of leadership needs to be at the table or in the boardroom to actually drive the change. We've seen that with digital transformation, it takes a, let's say, specific type of breed of leader, senior leader, executive leader.
Right.
Now we're moving into the AI transformation space. I think the hype is in the Gartner hype cycle right now. It's literally on the top.
Yes, it is.
The highest of the hype. So we're going to be disappointed in the coming few months.
Yes, we are.
But nevertheless, it needs to come to fruition and it needs a certain level of leadership. What's your view on this? How do you see that happening in the conversations?
I almost wish you hadn't asked me that question, but that you have. I think leadership in ASEAN banks are at a 1 out of 3 in maturity. I'll tell you why. Firstly, let's all agree that we've created a lot of fluffy, fuzzy, feel-good factor about a bank. Nobody holds Patek Philippe or Rolex responsible for charging a ridiculous amount for the art. But a bank needs to be for the people, by the people, make very little profit, give back. A bank is also a business. Their underlying motor is to make money, profit. It's not to serve the people and be here. That's just a marketing tagline. So the leaders that you ask me, they were from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and now the early 2000s, fixated on growth and profit. Nothing wrong with that. I think kudos. They've all delivered phenomenal results, dividends, and return on equity. Now what do you do? And what is needed of those leaderships? We were not very carbon neutral ever. Suddenly we are. Whether you like it or not, whether you're in the leadership role, to be carbon neutral in your data center is not a feel-good, fuzzy, oh, I care for the environment.
Yeah.
It's a mandate. It's almost restricted. It's governed. People are doing that reluctantly. So I think the leadership and board members need to start looking at this new world that they live in and saying, look, it was great until 2020, maybe. Now it's gone through a rapid change. You know, COVID brought about that acceleration of digital, and now AI is the death knell. That said, if you don't change, you are left behind.
Totally.
The leaders haven't caught up with that. And I think more needs to be done. So what we are doing, literally, is going from bank to bank, and we are showing them this movie trailer of what AI can do in banking. And when they see that, they said, oh, we need to buck up. We need to do something. And that's happening. Systematically, we're going from bank to bank. And then again, you, of course, have the other 30, 40% where the board is in the same direction and the management is in the same direction. And even the people below them are looking at that same direction. So there are others who've jumped onto the bandwagon and are benefiting. But a lot of the leadership, I think, is struggling to catch up. Viewpoints are still very jaded and biased. And those are the ones that we need to, come on, get on with the program.
So be left.
Yeah, I'll be left behind.
Osiris, you spent your time, let's say, meeting all these bankers in the boardroom, I imagine, typically the executive leadership. What's the number one thing that they need support with and that they ask your and your team's support on, if I may?
Training. It's such a small little word, but very little is done in training. Skill set trainings, board level training, management training. A lot needs to be done. And by training, I use that word liberally. Training means getting up to speed. For me, your morning session was nothing short of a training program.
You could look at it like
yeah?
that. Yeah.
I mean, you saw what's available. You saw case studies. You saw people coming and saying, I had this very particular predicament, and I overcame that using Backbase and this AI solution. That's training. I saw a lot of people make notes and take photographs. Why did that happen? Because there's a lack of training of use cases, lack of training of the understanding of the ramification that AI would have on your storage, infra, interoperability of applications. So in one word, training, a lot of training and a lot of handholding needs to take place so that we can bring them up. It's like going to my mom and my dad in their 80s and saying, here is a new Google search. Yeah, a little difficult. It's so simple. But we have to bring them all up to that, train them to be up to that certain benchmark. And I think that's what's missing in ASEAN, a certain amount of bringing them up to speed training for board, then for management, and then subsequently for all people, all the way down to the call center. Everybody needs a certain amount of training and handholding.
I would argue that this is a global phenomenon.
Is it?
Yeah. There's no markets. Well, actually, there is one that's in the Saudi. They're very much leading forward. They're very much on the AI.
I agree. Yes.
Very much
young. What you call management and board. See, they have this advantage of coming out of absolute low threshold and catapulting into today. So
they skip the two steps at the same
time, right? Correct. This new 15-year-old. When she or he gets a phone, she gets the latest phone with all of the latest gadgets. So you're inducted into that world. That was the UAE, that was Saudi, that was Doha. They came from the absolute rung and catapulted. Yeah. More can be done, even for them.
To your point, the educational thing is paramount.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, like you can spoon feed them all the concepts and show what do the use cases look like, what can they deliver.
True.
But at the same time, you need to have that own aha moment.
Yes,
right? You
correct.
Probably had your aha moment as well using AI-infused capabilities.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can you give an example, maybe? Where you
sure. All of my legal cross-references is done using a certain AI. It's a subscription-based AI. Should I sign this contract? What does this clause mean? What does that mean in Indonesia versus what does that mean in Singapore? You know, thank God for ChatGPT-5 and its legal ramifications. So yeah, I've had that aha moment saying, this is so much better than what my lawyer could have created that way.
Sure.
And cheaper. Yeah, at $50 a month.
There you go.
So,
besides, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, then moving on and going to the final topic for today. What are the main learnings or specific takeaways that you could share based on your experience as a senior analyst in the space? Where you feel, hey, if you're starting right now, you're in the market, you're evaluating your options, and you want to go transform the business.
Right.
What are, let's say, the top three things that you would say, do not forget about these three topics.
Okay. So first one, please learn to discount the hype and buy the facts. I see my bank ABC doing, something in SME, and I need to do that too. I saw a McKinsey report that says, if you don't have AI embedded in there, that's it, you're dead. I think discount the hype. You heard something, or your management heard something, or your board heard something. What is it that your financial institution does? And if you're a government-backed lender, say one of the big ones that we're dealing with in Thailand, their remit and their mandate is, thou shall lend to farmers. Okay, so let's go to the farmers. Let's understand what it is that they want and need and are desperately in need of, and then inculcate that within the banking offering. That reverse engineering works. So discount the hype of what you heard. What is it that you're in the business of doing? And then start catering to that. That's number one. Number two, I would say, this notion that still, I don't want to take names and put them in the spot, two very large organizations that I deal with have an army of programmers and people, and they've been notoriously infamous for build it myself. I'm sorry, that world is out. You don't start digging a well for water, and you don't buy a cow for milk, and that's been an age-old saying. But as yet, when it comes to technology, we insist on doing it. So that's the second thing. Do not become a tech expert. You're a financial institution. You're a banker. You're a custodian of my money and my wealth. Do that. There are other people. Sure, you can build it, augment it, enhance it to suit your clientele. Okay, slight customization is acceptable. But this number two of I will build it myself, it's a false notion, needs to be cut. And three, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Remember we studied that in physics. people want to do something in AI, but have no clue the ramification it has on the interoperability of other solutions, the bandwidth that is needed, the compute and the sheer GPU power that's needed, and the storage that it's needed, and the retrieval and that cycle. So when you're jumping into that, please think through the entire ramification of all that you're planning to do onto your existing backend, then make an informed decision. So three steps, three different things, but all leads towards how you make a decision. So
buy the facts.
Yeah. Discount the hype.
Discount the hype.
Yeah.
Make sure to...
Don't be entangled into building it yourself. There is a buy element, buy and enhance, buy and augment. And the third one is be cognizant of all of the magical front end bits that you're doing to your back end, which is traditionally what we call core banking. What will that look like in the next 3 to 5 years? Very different. And if you think you're going to work off your old core and just keep doing magic at the front end, oh my God, you've got a spaghetti in the making.
That is not a smart move. Three really great points. Then on that final point, there's the notion of agentic AI, right? Yeah. You can have agents that will do certain activities on your behalf. They'll do it with intelligence. They'll tap into knowledge vectors to bring it all together, what have you. The majority of the people and executives that I speak with say, love the technology. It's great. It's going to move the needle, but it's way too expensive. Way too expensive. What's your take?
Another loaded question. So why is BYD at $80,000 and the Rolls-Royce at $800,000 and both are in very, very high demand? BYD is very good. They can go through water and jump hoops and all the bells and the whistles, and it is AI and it is enabled and it's electric. So why is that only at 80? And why are people lining up to pay £800,000 for top of line Rolls-Royce? So it depends on what you want. So expensive depends on what it is that you're buying or investing in. You can get a Citizen's watch for $200. You can get a Patek for 200,000 euros. Why? They still say the time, right? I mean, it's 2:45. Mm-hmm. So why is it that we are caught up in this? One is cheap and one is expensive. I think we are benchmarking that against the wrong thing.
Well, it's being benchmarked against the current rate.
Correct.
Of doing business or the
Correct.
Current cost of account doing certain activities.
Correct. So if someone comes to me while we are doing the RFP and say, hypothetically, they're saying, we love Backbase, but they're expensive. I would simply ask, explain that to me. Expensive compared to what? Expensive related to what? Expensive compared to you would build it yourself. You saw another small application out of the Czech Republic that was cheaper. What is it that, and again, why is it that a Nokia used to cost $500 and at the time of the launch, an Apple was $1,000? There was a lot of research and development and functionalities and programming that went into it. So if you want a basic program with no intelligence, yes, if that's what you want, then this particular solution is expensive. But if you wanted something that runs your institution and is the intermediary between you and the consumer, the touch point, this is a good price point to get into.
Just and then into the technology.
Correct.
Embrace it in your
correct
model.
And then, so I don't take this is expensive too seriously, because I don't think the financial institution has understood what it is that they're looking to do or what problem are they trying to solve.
I would even argue that if you just take your old processes and you make them agentic, that's not very smart anyhow.
Correct.
Because that's bringing the old world into the new. So
correct.
What's the gain?
Amen.
And so the whole structure is ridiculous. Like, okay, get an agent to do it at 10x the cost. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you re-envision how you work, you're gonna find efficiencies.
Correct.
I'm ready today.
People in the next 3 years may argue, well, I have enough agents doing it. Well, hang on. Who trained and programmed those agents to do what? because maybe your output is completely flawed. You know, the good old saying, garbage in, garbage out. And there are instances that are happening. And agentic AI decided on a disapproval of a loan. And the regulator came and said, better explain it next time because this person is eligible for a loan. Your agent was wrong. That's already starting. So this, I will build it. It's cheaper. It's more affordable. It's an argument for the unresearched, I say. For the researched, they know exactly what they want and they know the price they'll have to pay for something good.
Do I think Philip? Get there and be the leading party.
Buy a Pathé and benefit from it.
There we go. You're keen on the watches.
Yes, I am. I'm a neurologist.
I like it. Hey, let's move to the wrap-up, Cyrus. Maybe you can make one thing to close off with. Like, what's the one thing you would share with the audience?
In addition to hire us and we'll make life simpler? In addition to that. I think, again, I've had the privilege of dealing with maybe about 250, 300 banks in the region and globally, and now increasingly so with 3Adventures, we are in Middle East and Africa. It's a universal problem. A, the bank knows what it wants to do, but it's very easily distracted by what's happening around them and what the other boys are doing. So my advice to them is that focus on where you're going to grow, the technology and the operations that it's needed to enable that growth, to future-proof yourself operationally. That is how you should be thinking. Not, I heard from BCG and McKinsey and hence I will do X. No, you know your bank, you know your region. So I think my one overarching thing was that number one, please discount the hype. Start creating, buying, and investing in the facts. The fact is, I'm in Nigeria. I am in, an agricultural plateau. I need to lend to these people. What is needed in Nigeria? What does it matter what a bank in Boston is doing? So, look at a couple of best practices, but don't be too distracted because right now, to my first point, we are a very multipolar world. So be very laser sharp with regards to where your bank is heading, what businesses you will get into, and what will influence that business. So that's my one takeaway.
Fantastic.
Laser focus.
There we go. Stay focused. And of course, full in top three I was shared. Cyrus, thank you so much for spending time.
My pleasure, Tim. It's been a joy and delight.
Likewise. For those listening in, you can find Cyrus on LinkedIn.
Yes.
We'll make sure this profile is in the show notes. And maybe we meet again in a year.
I'm sure we will. A very good rest of the couple of days of conference to you, Tim.
Thanks. And likewise.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow us on LinkedIn, where we'll be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.